It's really your generation that has the opportunity, I would say, to change that. Do you feel as though you or your generation, do you feel that you have the power, that you feel like you can get this done?
Hello, listeners, and thank you for joining us this week. I'm Allie White, and welcome to Generations, where Patricia Bransford, my grandmother, and I will shine a light on issues of race and gender, and also the intersection of race and gender, from the perspectives of two different generations that are not typically covered in our educational curriculum, but are learned from firsthand experiences. So my generation is at a juncture right now in 2021 where we're trying to find answers. And we recognize that there are a lot of stories that haven't been told and a lot of history that hasn't been taught. This episode, we want to talk about the great progress that was made during the only 12 years of Reconstruction and the brutal backlash and oppression that destroyed that progress in many families and communities along with it, specifically the rise of Jim Crow and the rarely told story of the Tulsa Race Massacre. We need to know what happened and why in order to repair the harm and move on in a successful way to thrive as a country. So first, Reconstruction was a time of great progress and opportunity. And so can you talk about your grandfather, John Moss, who was an ex-slave who went to law school and was appointed by Rutherford B. Hayes to be the first Black judge in D.C.?
Yes. John Moss was a well-educated lawyer in Washington, D.C., who became a lawyer despite some of the problems with segregation in Washington. During Reconstruction, there was an attempt to bring more brown and black people to high-level jobs in the government, and he was lucky to get one of those jobs. What is very clear to me is that African-American history was never told boldly or proudly. These progressive steps became known to all of us as a family, but I don't remember any celebration around it, if you will. I do have a cane that is now in a museum in Washington, D.C. that he carried. And that is being kept as a relic of that wonderful step in his life. Reconstruction was short. I think you mentioned 10 years.
I said 12 years.
12 years. And we have to make sure that some of the advancements that happen now with the focus on Black Lives Matter and making sure that we are integrating many of our positions in not only private sector, but also public sector and government. We have to make sure that we continue that in a very substantive way, or else there is the reaction to it, which it's almost as though history is repeating itself. When we hear what is going on in reaction to reform of voting rights, really in a way working against the improvement of racial groups. So it kind of sounds a lot like what happened in Reconstruction. What do you feel, Allie, when you hear, when you turn on the radio or look at TV and you see some of the news that's going on across the country, not just in one state, but in maybe 13, 14 states, where they're really trying to close down the ability to vote in elections?
Well, I mean, I feel like it's a very obvious form of oppression to silence Black voices and people of color. And I think that it's something that isn't being talked about enough. And I haven't heard a lot of people talking about it recently. And I think that it should definitely be talked about more.
That's a very good point, because by being quiet, we are in essence agreeing or allowing it to move on. Yeah. And so it's concerning to me, because that's what really happened in those 12 years following Jim Crow, is that we were beginning to close the racial divide. And as people got jobs like Moss, John Moss, there were people who became afraid that there would be more people like that who would get awards, and that possibly maybe it would lessen their opportunity. And it's interesting because we are going through a whole new era of the pandemic and disease that's spreading, right? And what's scary is the fact that people in low-income communities, primarily brown and black people, are the ones who have suffered from the disease the most. And it kind of, to me, and I don't really, as I talk, Allie, it's not that I have I'm a deep historian on this, but that it's so frightening, the parallels that I see now that I'm hearing on the, you know, on the news versus what I've read and heard about in Reconstruction and why it only lasted 12 years. Because of the fear of people who thought that first there was no right for Blacks to have the power or the vote or be able to determine the future of the country. And there's some people who actually right now are almost sounding very much like the people who took over right after Reconstruction.
Yeah, I definitely understand where you're coming from. And I agree with you on that front. I definitely feel like there's a lot of white power and fear that was created after the Reconstruction and that led to Jim Crow and the Tulsa massacre. So, I mean, talking about Jim Crow, do you have any memories of your older family members telling you what it was like for them or any experiences that they went through or any experiences that you went through?
You know, I grew up many, many years ago, right? And during that time, young students, children really were not as aware as they are now. You didn't have the media that you have now. I saw my first television show in 1948 when I was 8 years old. So it was just beginning. And now you've got many different forms of the news. It's a very different world today. And because of the iPhone, you almost see it happening as it occurs. So it's not something you asked me if I really was aware of any of this when I was growing up. I was aware of very little of it, including young people in conversations. Maybe some families did, mine didn't. And the news just didn't exist. Broadcast news just did not exist. And so whatever happened, and there are now, you see our stories of lynchings and all, they happen without our knowledge.
Well, yeah. I mean, furthermore, I just want to ask you if you picked up on any signals or if you picked up on any like emotions around your family, like talking about certain subjects or like when something bad would happen, like did your family talk about it or was it just quiet?
Well, both. I mean, you know, when I was in Lumberton, North Carolina in the deep South, I think I told you that there was always a fear that a cross would be left on my, a burning cross would be left on my lawn. It was always a signal that the Ku Klux Klan, which was a very active group of people who were threatening, terrorizing, you could almost think of them as the people in the Capitol on January 5th. So yes, I mean, I was aware, but my parents, I think, tried to save me from the fear, direct fear of it happening. And they would whisper. They were, you know, and I remember when, you know, there were discussions about it, but I was not included in the discussion for fear that I guess it would ruin my childhood or maybe it would you know, I would be so afraid that I wouldn't be able to sleep or, you know, be able to function as an individual. So I was saved or protected from what was happening at that time. But there were very clear signs of racist acts with cross burnings and lynchings. And there was as much going on then as there is, maybe there is more now, but what is happening is clear to all ages because we're all involved in the news. No one is saved. And it's either news as it happens or news as it's recreated on cable, right? By people who want to make it more interesting or, you know, invite discussion around it. So, yeah, I knew a lot of things were happening that weren't pleasant, but it wasn't brought into my direct life. And I think that's why maybe Tulsa was, you know, that our elders were trying to hide it from the children for fear that we would be afraid day in and day out. But Tulsa was a very difficult to understand for anyone that, you know, a whole neighborhood, a whole block of houses and businesses and people would be put at harm because they were doing well. They were building their own kind of ecosystem. They were building their own wealth. It didn't depend on any other people except those people in the neighborhood.
Before we go any further, I think we should introduce Tulsa and what happened there. So the Tulsa race massacre happened in the 1920s.
Yes.
So Tulsa was a highly segregated community where African Americans lived, and it had a very high economic prosperity because of the abundance of oil in the community. It was a very self-sufficient and self-reliant, prosperous Black economy. And Tulsa experienced a very high crime rate and little police enforcement within white communities. Because of the high crime rate and the little police enforcement, white communities often formed militias and carried out their own justice without law enforcement hindering them. And I think what caused the Tulsa race riot was when a 19-year-old Black teenager named Dick Rowland, who was a shoe shiner, was using an elevator in a building when a white 17-year-old Sarah Page, who operated the elevator, screamed. And then Sarah later accused Rowland of sexual harassment, and he was later arrested by the police and taken to Tulsa's courthouse. And armed militiamen began to gather at the courthouse to try to defend Rowland. And then they were turned down, which enabled the white mob to take action. And then shots began to fire, and the mob moved to destroy Black communities as the veterans fled. And there happened to be 300 people dead and 6,000 jailed and 10,000 homeless, which makes it one of the most violent, deadly riots in U.S. history. It's just very sad because they were left to defend for themselves against deadly white mobs. And they were also jailed and arrested during these riots. And they were denied the right of due process, which this is just another example of how law enforcement criminalizes African-Americans and created this idea of the concept of Blackness in America merged with the concept of whiteness in America.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way that you have described that. And based on enactments that I've seen of the, we can say, congressional massacre in January, we could see the same thing happen, like the rioters being invited almost to come into the Capitol, in some cases by congressional members with their weapons. So you had congressional members saying, well, they weren't really afraid because the rioters were white. And they mentioned that it would be a whole nother feeling that they would have if those rioters had been Black. And so they see whiteness and Blackness completely differently. There can be a white riot, which is, you know, invited almost, certainly not put down The Capitol Police were not even prepared, even though they were warned that they were coming. They did not prepare, did not have the correct armory, were not able to protect the Capitol or the senators and congressmen who were there. However, a handful of African Americans come in to silently protest that people are killed. Innocent people are killed because there's a feeling that they should not be able to assemble and they should not be able to protest. So it's just really interesting if you see those two events and how they're both treated, but it takes you back to Tulsa. It really takes you back to the description you just eloquently gave of Tulsa.
Yeah, I feel like it definitely, like both of the different reactions to those events clearly define the line between Black and white treatment by the police and by the government as well, which I think is a very important issue that needs to come to an end and that has been going on for way too long.
That is said over and over again now is, hey, this has gone on way too long. And we cannot allow this to happen. Our voting rights are being put in peril. And right in daylight, it's happening. I mean, people are passing laws that actually deny people the right to vote. It seems almost back to Jim Crow and that period after Reconstruction, yeah. After those 12 years. It seems like a repeat. It's really your generation that has the opportunity, I would say, to change that. Do you feel as though you or your generation, do you feel that you have the power, that you feel like you can get this done?
Well, I mean, I definitely feel like people are becoming more aware thanks to social media and the news. And I feel like I'm really hoping that things will get better, because we need to stop the cycle before it repeats itself again, as we've seen it happen so much. So I think that my generation has a good chance if everyone becomes educated on what's happened in the past, so we don't let it recur again in the future.
Yeah, no, that's very thoughtful, very well said. And when we talk, Allie, I can see history repeat itself.
Yeah.
Over and over. And I just am hoping that we find a way to work in a positive way, to work aggressively to end racism, which is at the root of all of it.
This was Generations. I'm Allie White. Thanks for listening. And thanks to my grandmother for joining me. Make sure to catch the next episode soon.